This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music and conversation from ocremix.org.
This week, we celebrate 25 years of supersonic sounds with an in-tune interview from the folks at Materia, a new Root Note exploring the early influences of the Blue Blur, and a playlist as big as the cat.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 29th episode of the Overclocked Podcast, an anniversary way more important than the 25th anniversary of Sonic. I am your host, Brian, and joining me today is my brother and co-host, Steven. Hello, Steven.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this most special and solemn of a... It's not really solemn.
Why is it solemn?
I don't know. I'm just trying to make feel grand, because I'm really happy about this. Sonic the Hedgehog has a special place in my heart.
If you haven't been able to tell by now, I'm sure most people have. We are delightfully obsessed with Sonic music across the board, like down to his most modern games or his very first one.
Yeah, no kidding. We've been playing them since we were kids. We still play them. We don't play all of them, but we play most of them. I had to put that disclaimer in there. But I think this episode does a good job of trying to explore all of those fun nooks and crannies from the Sonic series, because like we kind of said up top, the whole episode is going to be Sonic themed.
Well, yeah, pretty much. The Remix Rewind, not so much, because most of the Sonic songs were actually posted last
week. Well, we missed that boat. This is such a big episode, we had to wait 2 weeks to make it.
Exactly, yeah. And it's a pretty busy one for me, actually. I'm going to be going out of town for a week and a half starting tomorrow, so I won't actually be here for the next couple episodes. That'll be an interesting experience.
So what will it mean? Will I solo the episodes? Will I find guests to fill in for Brian? Will I just not put anything up? No one knows!
All of the above.
Well, before we get moving into the Remix Rewind, I want to mention something about the interview.
Yes.
Which is the fact that it's with the Materia guys. They and a bunch of other people collaborate to make these big, giant, cool, licensed albums focused on a specific series of video games. And their most recent one was Sonic, of course, for the 25th anniversary. So I talked to Steven Frober, a fellow Steven who loves Sonic and Sonic CD as much as I do. Along with Sebastian Wolf, they're both part of the crew, but I would be remiss if I did not mention Monica. She does their PR, and she was originally part of the call, but because of my dunderheadedness, we did not record her audio. So after a moment of panic and a few emails in which I said sorry over and over again.
That seems like productive emails.
Yeah, that's how a lot of my emailing goes, actually. But I was able to keep up the 30-plus minute interview. It's great. It's fun. It's filled with Sonic cheer. But I had to edit her out completely. So just know there's a ghost in the room. Never forget Monica was there.
All right. I will be listening for her, but not actually hearing her.
Okay.
And on that note, let's go ahead and jump into this week's Remix Rewind. Let's look at the
Sir Jordanius takes the short and simple Prelude of Light from Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time and slips it on like a tailored suit. Then he wears that suit to a dimly lit jazz bar, where a blend of smooth conversational melody and original lyrics carry over the backdrop of Big Band winding down for the night. The tune itself is called Namor's Nudlib Theme, DJP Naptime Edit.
Listen.
Dawn of a New Dream is the perfect remix to end our Esther's Dream sampling on. Radio War takes Majora's Mask's Tattle and Tail theme and puffs it into a billowing cloud of chimes, pushed along under a glowing full moon on the gentle breeze of acoustic guitar. Close your eyes to this Zelda-themed lullaby, and you'll be peacefully dreaming before you can say convoluted timeline.
The Materia Collective really knows about the power of teamwork. This track off their Final Fantasy VII Remix album is a testament to just that, as Shafi One leads a full band of eight other musicians in a genre-bending, funk-infused reimagining of Judgment Day, dubbed Judgment Funkadelic. The original's somber foreboding is swept away with stylish swagger, as the band proves just how versatile Final Fantasy VII's music can be.
For these remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org.
Welcome back. It's another InTune interview where we talk to music makers about the music that they make. I'm Steven, and unfortunately my brother Brian has once again gotten lost along the way. Last I heard, he was somewhere in Eastern Arabia, I think. We're hoping that he'll encounter some of the Sonic and the Secret Rings while he's over there. Anyway, we have a couple of guests here, too, to talk about the new Mobius Sonic the Hedgehog remixed album. Firstly, we've got a second Steven. I know how exciting that is. Hey, Steven, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you very much. I'm glad to be here and looking forward to it.
And also, there's Sebastian Wolf, and his name I find easier. Hey, Sebastian.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here, surrounded by Stevens.
No, a little intimidating, I can imagine. But yeah, I'm really glad both of you guys are here because this show is so exciting to me because it is a Sonic-themed episode. Everything that we could possibly cram Sonic, we have crammed Sonic into this show. So this is going to be a nice little crowning achievement for it. So I guess, why don't you guys start by introducing the Materia Collective and kind of your roles in it?
So I'm the founder of the Materia Collective. I sort of oversee a couple of the projects that we're doing, and I'm sort of acting as the executive producer for sort of directing our close to 400 members at this point into all of our creative pursuits that we're up to these days.
Yeah, and what was the first Materia album that you guys put out again?
Our debut album and our namesake, actually. Materia came out just about 3 months after last year's announcement of the Final Fantasy VII remake.
So yeah.
The inception of the Materia Collective is an interesting story. You know, being a video game music nerd, like everyone here, I suppose, I posted on Facebook as soon as the announcement dropped for Final Fantasy VII Remake. And, you know, hey, you know, would anyone be interested in maybe collaborating on a small EP of Final Fantasy covers, which we can license and distribute and make this a commercial album? And it turned out roughly 192 people were interested, approximately, on collaborating on such an album.
So an EP was now out of the question.
It was a series of EPs, if you will. So it turned into a total of 87 tracks with 192 contributions, many of them doubled up and collaborating on each other's tracks. And after the album came out, you know, we decided, hey, we have this fantastic community of passionate, talented, and super driven and motivated people who love video game music and love giving back to the community and everything. So we decided to keep a good thing going and, you know, made a second album and then a third. And, well, hopefully we can continue doing so and spread the gospel of video game music.
Oh, I hope so. I greatly hope so. It's been really fun to watch and listen to these projects come to fruition, especially the Sonic the Hedgehog one, because as everyone here knows who listens to the show, whether they want to know it or not, Brian and I have a very storied and fond history with Sonic, not just the games, but especially the music. And so Mobius is just that, right? It's an album stuffed with amazing remixes about the Sonic series. It has, I don't know, how many tracks is it again? I can't even remember.
It was 58 tracks.
Yeah, that's, it took me like 5 car rides to finish the whole thing. I judge my music time by car rides most of the time.
That is a good barometer.
Man, it just went everywhere. So before we kind of, I guess, delve into the creative process of the album, why don't you guys give us a little take on your history with Sonic the Hedgehog?
Okay, so for me, I was, let's see, I would have been 1991, so 7 years old, when Sonic the Hedgehog first came out for Sega Genesis. Mm-hmm. Now, brief backdrop, I came from kind of a culture and background, I'll tread delicately here. I came from a background where I didn't have a lot of exposure to things outside of like religious music.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sonic the Hedgehog ended up being my first exposure to sort of this like rock pop idiom.
Yeah.
The music just blew my mind. And I didn't have a Sega, and so I was trying to convince my parents to get it, but every time we would go into, like, I think it was called Montgomery Ward, there was this department store in the mall.
Yeah.
And so I would go in there, and they had, like, the Sega display with the controllers that were on the little tubes, and you could press the button to play the, like, 5 different games on display. And so I would always go over there and either play like Echo the Dolphin or Sonic the Hedgehog and just obsess over the music. And I would watch the demo mode where it would go through the first 3 zones. And so then finally, my parents got me a Sega Genesis and it came with Sonic Spinball.
Oh, and, the highest and then quality I went back of Sonic games.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Still ate up the music, of course,
oh, yeah,
but went
stuff.
Back and got... Oh, yeah. Super fun. Got Sonic 1 and 2, you know, and what I would do, actually, is I had one of those little, like, Sony voice recorders.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go and record during the daytime. I would record, you know, the music from one of the zones. And then at nighttime, I would sneak the recorder back into my bedroom, turn it at low volume, and play it back at different speeds, because you could do like the fast speed where it was like,
and then
slow it down so you could hear the music at three different pitches.
Oh, that's really
and three different speeds.
You were already like pulling apart and studying music analysis.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, so for Sonic CD, what happened was my cousin, Will, he had a version, I think, that got scratched where it wouldn't, the game would no longer play, but the music still would. So he gave me his old copy, and I brought it home, put it in my dad's computer at the time, PC, and would just listen to it for hours over and over. This is the US soundtrack, and just obsessed over it. For literally like 2 years, I listened to that CD nonstop. It was my first and only CD of like actual like rock music and pop and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
And quirky, whatever, proggish kind of stuff that you would call Sonic CD soundtrack.
But yeah, it kind of jumps into multiple genres, but somehow stays consistent. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, and so I fell in love, and that became my favorite soundtrack. And so I actually like digested the full soundtrack before I ever actually got to play Sonic CD. And it wasn't until like 2 years later when I got a Sega CD like in a bargain bin and was actually able to play it. That era between Sonic CD and like Nights into Dreams for Sega Saturn, that was like my pinnacle, huge, you know, diehard Sega fan, you know, part of the console wars kid, you know, and just Sonic everything. And after that point, once the Saturn hit and once they failed to deliver a meaningful Sonic game for Saturn, and then Dreamcast came out, you know, I was already kind of getting older and in my teenage years. And
yeah,
so I played Sonic Adventure, and I think Sonic Adventure 2 I finished like one time. And that was sort of where I was like kind of getting out of that phase of life. Still love Sonic, and I've, you know, I've gone back and played other games and stuff like that, but I had a long season of, you know, just kind of getting into different things after that. So
yep, that totally makes sense. I think that you said you were 7 when the first game came out.
Yep.
So I'm about, you know, 5-ish years younger than you. My path ended up, Sonic Adventure 2 is what really got me into the series after Sonic CD. So I had a really a weird and troubled Sonic history, but
nice.
Sonic CD was the first Sonic game I ever played. I actually talked about this on Radio Sega recently, but I bought it. Well, I guess my mom bought it for Brian for his 3rd birthday. And I was not sold on it. I looked at the back of the CD and I thought, man, this looks way too difficult and complicated. I don't think he could beat it as a 3-year-old. I was completely wrong. He loved it. I loved it. It became our favorite game. Maybe next to the Lost Vikings. I don't know.
Yeah. Nice.
I mean, yeah, some quality entertainment there for children. It wasn't until the GameCube that we really played another Sonic game, unless of course you count Sonic R, which we weirdly loved.
So did I. Like, that's one of those guilty pleasure games where like you don't admit it to your friends, but you're just like, everybody's Super Sonic. You know.
I mean, we'd play split screen and we knew all the songs by heart. It was good times. But it was really
living in the city, baby.
It was really Sonic Adventure 2 that got us into the series and into video game music, and honestly, music in general. I think it was largely because the characters were so tied to their theme songs, and that was really fun and inviting to us. And that just kicked off a long-lasting love for video game music.
That's cool. So Sonic CD, now did you guys actually have like a Sega CD?
No, here's the thing. It was the PC version.
The PC version. Oh, yeah, yeah. That, like, it had like the Japanese soundtrack and the US soundtrack on there.
That's what we discovered by putting it in the CD player.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We just were like, what is going on? What is this? Like, this is some weird pirate bootleg version we got where someone put their wacky, like, J-pop hyper version. Like,
I know.
No, it was the weirdest thing. But to pass it on to you, Sebastian, What was your history with Sonic the Hedgehog, or did you ever get into the series?
Let's see. I grew up pretty much without video games. Now, this this might be a surprising answer, but I think it was it wasn't until third or fourth grade when I got a Game Boy and an N64 after severely convincing my parents of the merits of audiovisual entertainment and all that. So I grew up with...
Yeah, I went through the same struggle.
You understand.
Oh, yeah,
I was a Nintendo kid through and through. Diddy Kong Racing. I think if you can find anyone who can beat me on all of that, let me know. But as such, Sonic wasn't part of my repertoire when I was growing up. And it was always that cool friend that you had in school and you go and visit and you got to play Sonic and all the other cool Sega Genesis games. So aside from the music, I'm way too unfamiliar with all of Sonic. But, you know, the music holds a special place in my heart. Through and through, like, the entirety of the series just has this fantastic music, and it sticks with you like all of the old music. You know, pick your favorite chip tunes.
Sebastian, that pretty much, you know, runs us through your history, considering there kind of wasn't one, which is really interesting to me. I'm glad that you came to an appreciation of the music over the eras, because it's changed so much, and it's always been such an interesting... I don't know, an interesting aspect of the video game music world.
Absolutely. And as with all games, it's so exciting to see the evolution of the various games. So, for example, not to go on a huge tangent, but the Pokemon games and that entire series. So I grew up on Blue because Blue was better than Red, obviously. But the music, as it's evolved, you know, even in, you know, the latest Pokemon White 2 and Black 2, you can still find the origins, like the very inception of the musicality and all the themes and the motifs that have sort of transgressed the last, what is it, 25 years? No, 20 years. I'm not that old yet. 20 years of Pokemon. But you can see, the melodic advancement that has happened in... even such a long time frame, but it still sticks true to the roots. And I think the same can be said about Sonic music as well. Despite, you know, going through a series of different composers and musical artists who have contributed to their compositions.
Yeah, it's been a strange evolving thing, and it always, you know, it sort of switches hearts and styles along the way, but it always ends up kind of oddly consistent. It's kind of amazing what Sega can do with their sound teams.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But having Steven sort of take this entire project and bring it to such an amazing level at the end, you know, it makes me fall in love with the music of Sonic all over again. And hey, maybe I'll actually play Sonic game one of these days.
Start with Sonic CD.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Brings a tear to the eye. Thank you.
Why don't you walk us through what it was like to put through Mobius? And Steven, I guess you can start.
Okay, sure thing. All right, so Mobius's inception was, we got to this point, we did the first two albums, which were Materia and Successor, Final Fantasy VII and VIII, and Sebastian was at the helm with both of those and did a fantastic job. And then, this was around like the first of the year, we kind of started talking about, you know, like expanded directions, essentially, for the group. And so I knew... from the bottom of my heart that Sonic the Hedgehog had to be in there because it was such an important part of my journey, not only as a musician, but, you know, as a person, because it, in many ways, it would not be hyperbole to say that it's kind of the reason why I am who I am today in some ways. You know, it didn't stay. Like, I can't say that Sonic remained an influence, you know, through my adult years as much, of course, but like now I've got my own kids and they're playing Sonic, and they've got my Sonic the Hedgehog stuffed animals from when I was like 7 and 8 years old.
That's awesome.
So fantastic.
Kind of a neat thing. So I knew I wanted to do this for the album. And so what ended up happening was my assistant producer, John Montoya, he wanted to do Sonic as well. We both sort of simultaneously made some postings in the group, and then we were like, hey, you and I, we need to talk about this. And then everybody got really excited about it. And then we were like, okay, I think we're doing this. By the way, Sebastian, can we do this? and he was super gracious with us for, we kind of got the ball rolling before we'd even not quite cleared it with him yet.
Yeah. And, it's, well, it was an inevitable project. It was going to happen one way or another.
Yeah.
So you guys had a ton of people to choose from, right? From all the people you had met through the past Materia albums.
Absolutely.
So how the heck do you organize something like this? You know, you have, you know, 20 years of music to choose from. Did you try to get people to kind of spread out across the multiple eras? And you say, no, we have too much Sonic 2. Can you do something else? Like, how did you manage that end of the program?
Yeah, it's sort of, so I kind of set out with some goals up front, and they were a little bit loose. I wanted to be flexible. The biggest thing that I was trying to avoid was like too many duplicates of, say, you know, like Green Hill Zone or something like that, where, or, you know, mm-hmm. Chemical Plant, the big tracks that get remixed all the time.
The best tracks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're great tracks, but it was like I wanted to give love to some of the more obscure, you know, games and songs in there. So the initial kind of setup was like, hey, here's, if you're unfamiliar with Sonic, here's my like perfect world playlist of the tracks that I really would love to see covered. And then everybody else sort of jumped in, and we really did have like a smattering of every generation of Sonic fan, because we've got, and Sebastian, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, I think I might be the oldest person, at least in the Mobius group. And then all the way down to Charles Ritz, who is 16 and pumping out fantastic tracks. So, like,
that's awesome.
He's half my age, like a full generation removed. Go look at Charles' YouTube page, and I swear, if you had no idea the dude was 16, like, you would have no idea.
It's amazing.
Dude's going places, but, yeah. So, super cool. And so we ended up getting kind of the same spread of tracks as well. So, you know, we got some sort of Nexus collective points. You know, we got quite a few Sonic 2 tracks, quite a few off of the original game, several Sonic Adventure songs, mm-hmm. you know. But we did grab, like Spinball. We got one track from Knuckles Chaotix, you know, and some of the more Sonic Colors, a few
you
of the games that
covered
are on the periphery.
The animated cartoon from back in the day.
Yeah, Saturday morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm still mad at you for getting that stuck in my head, by the way.
Yeah.
Speeds by.
Oh man, and I love that series too. The ending to season 2. If you watch that show, the ending to season 2, and that they canceled it at that point, I was so pissed. I'm still pissed to this day.
I never watched that one. I watched the other one, the one with the it was basically just Looney Tunes, but with Sonic and the voice of Bugs Bunny.
Sonic, the Sonic Adventure or
whatever
Saturday Morning Adventure series.
So well, let's say that I was in the past and I wanted to submit something to Mobius. Did you have any guidelines for submissions, whether it was the songs they picked, some sort of like bar of quality, or were you able to be choosy enough with the people that everyone, you know, who contributed had something good to say?
So what we learned, from our first three albums. So we did a Materia, our Final Fantasy VII cover album, then Successor, Final Fantasy VIII, because, you know, the name is perfect and, you know, 7, 8, 9 mm-hmm. ? And then we did a Ori and the Blind Forest tribute, composer Gareth Coker, that celebrated its first anniversary of release. So that was fantastic. But mm-hmm. by having produced these three projects, we learned a lot about, you know, what can really bring remixers and cover artists to like really be successful. And most of that is check-ins and deadlines and really making sure that everyone has what they need in order for their tracks to just be, you know, splendid and shine, you know, as mm-hmm. each individual gems. So we had a couple of rough deadlines set in terms of, you know, you have a track proposal that you submit, and you basically think about your track up front before you even start arranging it, or, you know, maybe you have started arranging it, but in order for the track to go through and actually be on the album or consider to be on the album, you need to have a proposal. You know, this is the style I want to do, I want to collaborate with these people. And we had, Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had over 100 total submissions for tracks.
Oh yeah, definitely over 100.
And so what was the whittling process like? How did you come to your final decision?
I think for the most part, it was kind of the whittling process happens naturally over the course of development, because, with a group, with any group this size, when you've got a project like this where it's, a fan collaborative project, you're going to have, just life that happens for some
sure.
people. And so there's a natural sort of whittling process. But I think internally, we established amongst ourselves, we're very welcoming to anybody that comes in. And then once we're in a project going, we sort of establish a baseline of quality and we let each other know, like, hey, love you, but let's work on this mix again, or hey, let's go back and and it's not a hit on anybody's skill. Like, we're all helping each other get to that end goal of a polished product.
So with so many people contributing to a single album that has a price tag, did you have to go license through Sega or what?
All of the licensing. So Mobius is a 100% licensed album. Sega gets paid for every copy that is sold, and we ended up licensing it through Louder. But the cool thing is, since Sega has published pretty much all of their soundtracks, every single one of those tracks is eligible to be covered.
Nice.
With a certain number of restrictions.
Go ahead.
So something like that makes it really wonderful for, the entirety of the cover song and remix community. If they want to do covers and, they want to have it up on iTunes and legally and, make sure that the composers get compensated, that's pretty close to the mission of Materia Collective, in terms of, it's a community thing. Everyone who contributes to some degree, help something come to fruition, really be successful, they deserve, a little bit of compensation and credit and everything. So even if you have a look at the Materia Collective website, materiacollective.com, you can see every single contribution that everyone has done on every single track.
Someone
was on a choir, you see exactly what they did. Someone played trumpet and trombone on a track, you're going to see that credit. So
I am so glad you did that, because as someone who has hosted video game music podcasts for years at this point, tracking down the credits for songs can be maddening, and to have it all in one place is not only good for the artists, but good for people who are legitimately curious or need to know for a multitude of reasons.
And I mean, I come from a background of working a little bit in the music industry, so that's been one of my guiding principles about, keep it honest, keep it transparent. Make sure everyone is sort of on the same page about what everyone is working on, what, contributions there are. And that, of course, also goes down to, like you said, sort of the licensing thing. So Sega gets compensated for every copy that is sold.
Yeah, that is excellent. I'm really glad you were able to make that happen, and good on Sega for, putting so much effort into getting those soundtracks out there on the market. That's a rare thing.
Absolutely.
It's becoming more common, but my goodness, I've appreciated it so much.
Nintendo, we're looking at you.
I didn't want to say it.
I just did my duck lips glare face like, Nintendo.
Please tell me you took a screenshot.
Oh, it's tragic.
So one of the big missions about Materia Collective is, of course, helping collaborators succeed, bringing people together, being transparent about it. But then also, as we're sort of building out, our, music rights and music publishing side, as well as our record label, we're really hoping that we take our core qualities, that we've built with our, almost 400 members now, to the next level, and can really help more people working on covers and remixes and soundtracks really achieve their goals.
Ben, I know it is probably unfair to ask you guys what your favorite track is. So how about instead I ask you this? Were there any tracks that were submitted that really caught you off guard or surprised you pleasantly out of the many?
Yeah.
Didn't have to be your number one.
Okay,
one of them.
Steven,
given already that this is a tough question, because as producer, hearing all of these tracks and, putting blood, sweat, and tears into several of them, I'm floored by all of them. But a couple of them, I think, did stand out for a couple of different reasons. So I think just purely from a musical perspective of just when I heard the final track, it was like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
That would be Aqua Pump by Pirate Crab, which ended up being the second song on the album. And the reason why I put it there was because it was like, okay, we've got the Sega choir. I want for diehard Sonic fans to just be like, exactly what I just said. Yes! You know, right off the bat. Yeah. So that track was really amazing. Videri String Quartet. So their Green Hill Zone rendition. The cool part about that track, I listened to it. When I got the submission, I was like, man, this sounds fantastic. Of course, it's Videri. You know, this is going to be great. And you get all the way to the end of the song, and at the very end, and you hear, oh my God, uh-huh. That was live.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Like, it sounds like a studio recording.
If you ever get a chance to see
it, was a live recording.
That's really cool.
Absolutely incredible.
That's awesome.
They perform at GDC a couple of times, and I actually got to hear that arrangement live. So they're phenomenal.
And then one other one that stand out. So this one was stand out to me in an emotional quality. And sorry, we're going to take a little turn into like serious realm here for a second.
By all means.
But it's important. So one other standout track. So this was about a month mm-hmm. into the project. So I think we started it like late February, early March, something like that. And about a month into it, one of our artists, Lauren the Flute, she's a YouTuber and Twitch streamer. Mm-hmm. She did a track, and it's at the end of Disc 2 called Dreams of Absolution. The way that that track came about was that she actually got a message from the mother of one of her fans on YouTube saying, hey, my daughter is really into Sonic and also played the flute and was a big fan of you. Would you mind doing a cover for her? She's really sick right now. And so we, you know, Lauren came to us and told us what was going on, you know, and she was a little, you know, obviously kind of stressed about it because she wanted to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
For this family. So we all kind of dove in and, you know, tried to do as much as we could. And I think she ended up getting help from a couple of people that really solidified the track for her. And so she emailed off the track. So that was the first track done on the album, like finished from top to bottom.
That's pretty amazing.
And pretty cool. And then unfortunately, the girl did hear the track in time, which is awesome. And then the illness eventually, you know, mm-hmm. got the best of her, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very sad. But it was one of those moments where I think for all of us, it was kind of like, okay, yes, we're doing video game music. Yes, this is Sonic the Hedgehog. Yes, you know, there's an element of like lightheartedness. But at the same time, like for me, this is really poignant because now I'm in this phase of life where, you know, mm-hmm. video gaming now has been a part of my life in some capacity for 25-ish years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are aspects that might be somebody's memory of somebody, you know, of their love of a certain game and of a certain soundtrack or how they connected with it.
Yeah.
Video games have matured to the point where that is now, mm-hmm. you know, a memory for people, that how you would connect with them, how you would remember them by, you know, which is amazing.
You're totally right. And as we grow up alongside video games, they not only become really important memories, but we can sort of track our lives alongside them. Like, you know, you can like remember back to a time in your life or when you hung out with a specific friend or when you lived close to your family or whatever it is. oftentimes games will be right there alongside you, and the music will bring you back to that time immediately, which I think that's one reason it's such a dramatic connection for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And it's a beautiful thing. And I think that was kind of a uniting point on the album for all of us, in the sense that it gave kind of a deeper level of meaning to what we were participating in, that like, okay, yes, it's fun. Yes, we enjoy what we do. Yes, there's an element of lightheartedness, but at the end of the day, like, as a musician, you really do have some power to be a part of people's lives in a way that you may not have any idea how that's actually being delivered to them,
you
know?
Yep. Well said. But before we move on, Sebastian, is there any track that you wanted to highlight that you were really pleased with?
Oh, I can't follow that. Well, if I have to draw someone to the forefront, it's going to be the Bwok Choir. It has become a little bit of an inside joke and meme on the original Materia track. Bobby Bogovic, who's an audio designer and composer, works at Chell Games. She came up with a brilliant idea of using puppets and chickens and make a cover of the Chocobo theme with puppets and chickens. So the next time you have 1.5 minutes of time, you should go listen to the Bwok Choir and their entire chronology, as they were likely to make an appearance on every Materia Collective track.
I still remember where I was when that track came on, and I thought I was having a fever dream. It was,
and that's about the highest compliment that can be given for any track.
It was pretty awesome, and I will say the name Death Eggs Over Easy made it a lot better. That was a good choice.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be one of our Materia Collective, like, running gags, a la, like, Sid and Chocobos and stuff.
The Bwok will be with you always.
Every album will have its own iteration.
Well, before we finish this off, I got to let you know what my surprise was. And, of course, the whole album was kind of a surprise, I guess you could say. But there were many that I enjoyed, but the one that kind of stuck with me the most was Sleep with the Stars, the final song for the first disc. Because that was a beautiful, emotional cover of Reach for the Stars from Sonic Colors, which was the theme, I don't remember actually who did that song, but, you know, it was the vocal track that you used to get in all major, like, Sonic titles. And there was something so, like, gentle and, like, it's kind of hard to listen to it without either getting nostalgic or holding back tears a little bit. It's really, really good.
Yeah, Skitch is the man. Fun fact, by the way, Skitch did the final pass of mastering on the entire album.
Really?
We did individual, we kind of had like a two-phase mastering process where we would sort of get the final mix and then polish it, do, you know, kind of final mastering EQ stuff, bring up the levels to a certain point. Then Skitch did the final pass on everything for leveling like across the disc in a single pass.
That's a job for you.
Skitch
is a job, and he did a wonderful job.
Skitch is an incredible mastering engineer, and he's working on a couple of other upcoming projects for Materia as well. So,
well, I mean, while we're on the topic of things coming up in the future, is it all super secret, or can you guys talk about anything that you're working on or planning?
Super secret.
Super secret!
No, we have we have either 7 or 8 more albums coming out before the end of the year.
Whoa, wait. 7 or 8 in the next six months?
Yes.
7 or 8. So in case you enjoy video game music, we might have games that soundtracks and cover albums of games that might pique your interest. But other than that, can't say much.
But look at our track record.
Literally, your track record. I like it. Well, I really appreciate you guys coming out and
thank you kindly
and hanging out with us for a while. It was a pleasure to have all of you on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate your time, and it was fun.
Oh, of course. I was happy to talk with you. I mean, any time to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog, just I'm here. I'm just waiting patiently. So where can people find you if they want to learn more about Materia or just follow you individually?
So MateriaCollective.com is probably the easiest point for people to go. Every single one of our albums has a dedicated album page, which, as mentioned before, has a complete listing of everyone who collaborated on a track. And then the individual artist pages, people can learn a little bit more, see the bio, you know, see their Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and SoundCloud and Patreon and all the other links so people can go follow their favorite artists individually if they are not already. Yeah.
Nice.
Also, we're all over social media. Find us, follow us, like, comment, subscribe.
Cool. I will check them out for sure. And listeners, you should do the same. How about you guys, though? Do you have like a Twitter handle you want people to look up, or do you want to remain secret and anonymous?
Yeah, so for me, if you want to follow, mine is at @SRF_audio.
All
right.
That's my Twitter handle.
Sebastian, what about you?
I am German Seabass, a name that has persisted through the ages.
All right, sounds good. Well, thanks to you again. This was super fun. I had a lot of fun talking about Mobius and all the other things we've veered into. And I'm sure we'll have you guys back again maybe 7 or 8 more times throughout the year.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to it.
Now we're going to take you back to the show.
This is Carl here from the Super Mercado Brothers, and today I'm going to be talking about the musical influences of the Sonic games for the Genesis. One of the primary objectives for Sega when creating the original Sonic the Hedgehog was that it needed to be cool, much cooler than Mario. The character had attitude, and that carried over into the tone of the game itself. And one of the most important ways to make a game cool, especially back then, was with the music. Potentially the coolest music of the late 80s and early 90s was R&B, the likes of Michael Jackson, Prince, Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown, and more. In order to channel this contemporary pop energy, Sega specifically hired Masato Nakamura, bassist and songwriter of Japanese pop band Dreams Come True. Nakamura's sonic melodies became some of the most beloved in all of gaming. His songwriting craft and ability to nail popular contemporary genres was a breath of fresh air for the video game music world. And if you go back, you can really hear how the music he was listening to at the time influenced what he wrote for the game. For example, he may have been channeling Bobby Brown for Spring Yard Zone. Or possibly even 80s film score such as Blade Runner for Scrap Brain Zone. And at times, maybe even drawing from pop music from decades earlier, like in Marble Zone. The way he blended all those influences together was masterful, and he had such a good time with the first two Sonic games that he incorporated some of its music back into his band Dreams Come True. And unlike the music of many other video game series such as Mario, which is based on older musical genres, ragtime, classical, jazz, and others, the music of these Sonic games was distinctly contemporary. When it comes to Sonic 3, most of you are probably familiar with the infamy of Michael Jackson's involvement. This could be its own segment, but long story short, he was involved in composing music for the game, and some of it ended up being included in the final product. And whether or not a track was composed by him, his crew, or members of the Sega sound team, there was clear MJ influence on the sound of the game, from the sound of the percussion, the glass breaks, even specific musical hits. It's pretty remarkable how, only using an FM sound chip, they were able to pretty faithfully capture New Jack Swing, a genre that was popularized by Michael Jackson. The music here was rhythmic, funky, exciting, and unquestionably cool. The staff role was worked on by him and one of his partners, Brad Buxer, and it shares the same chord progression as his song Stranger in Moscow, released 2 years later. One of the most exciting discoveries made a few years ago was the surfacing of an old unreleased song from Brad Buxer's 80s band, The Jetsons, which, lo and behold, was the foundation for Ice Cap Zone. It's crazy how similar this is, even down to the sound of the synth bass. Now, as the series continued on in the later years, the pop R&B influence faded away and was replaced with rock, probably to continue the trend of using contemporary music in order to keep the games cool. But I'm a sucker for the old-school Genesis Sonic soundtracks. There's really nothing quite like them. They serve as kind of a time capsule for that era's pop music, but oddly, I think they stand the test of time better than much of the music that inspired them. The choice of Sega bringing in real-world pop songwriters was a brilliant one, and I think it was a big reason why those games felt so fresh and cool. Well, that's it for me. I'm off to go down a rabbit hole of 90s pop nostalgia. Until next time, this is Carl from the Super Mercado Brothers. Stay cool, everyone.
What you need. And that'll do it for this episode. That was a lot of Sonic stuff.
Man, it wasn't enough, but I'm still satisfied for now. Until the 26th anniversary.
Yeah, no, actually, this is going to be Sonic year, every episode this year.
We could do a Sonic show. Like, we could do a weekly Sonic show.
You mean just an entire show about Sonic music?
Yeah.
That's the end game here.
Yeah, we had to lure people in a little bit. You know, pretend like it's a special occasion, and eventually it just becomes an occasion.
Speaking of Sonic, we do have a special little bit here for loyal listeners who actually listen to the show.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, loyal listeners.
So the newest Materia Collective album, Mobius, just came out, as I'm sure we went over in the interview, Stephen. If you didn't, then you probably did a pretty bad interview.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that once or twice.
And the folks over at Materia were nice enough to give us some copies of the album to give away.
Now, hold on, Brian.
Yes.
Let's be clear here. This was Monica's idea.
Oh, the person who disappeared.
Never forget
the
Monica.
Non-existent Monica. I forgot already.
Dang it.
Oh, no.
That was the one thing I told you to do for this episode. But yeah, they were nice enough to hook us up with two codes for the album. So you can, hear it for yourself. Highly recommended. Yep. One is going to be given away on our Twitter account. So I don't know. Go ahead and look over there if you like. You're not going to win both. Like, that's just greedy. So you can submit for both. I don't care, but we're not going to give you both. That one's just going to be a basic, retweet and enter a random drawing kind of thing. But we wanted to do something special for the people crazy enough to listen to our entire show.
Oh, so, what is that?
Well, what we would like you to do, and we thought very hard about this, we would like you to write us a story about Knuckles the Echidna. That is the extent of the rules.
Write us a story. We will give you no more guidelines than
this. It can be any medium, any length, any possible way you want to get it to us. You have 1 week to do this.
Send Echidna us, not.
Send us a story about Knuckles, and our favorite one will get the code.
All right. Yeah, that'll be it. If you want to send that story to us, Stephen, where can you get in contact?
Well, you could do it on Twitter, and while you're there, you know, check out the other code being given away. That's it. OCR Podcast on Twitter.
Or, alternatively, you could email us at podcast@ocremix.org.
Another fine way to do it. And if you just want to talk to us about all kinds of stuff about the podcast in general, you might want to do that on the forums at ocremix.org.
Or if you just want to find our stuff on the internet, head over to whalesarewhales.com, whalesarewhales.com for other projects and shows from us.
So thanks a lot for listening, and now we're going to go into an extra big, you see what I did there?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Edition of the playlist, all about Sonic music. The playlist is a weekly collection of recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Seven Rings in Hand from Sonic and the Secret Rings and submitted by the MDisc Playlist Podcast.
Sonic Boom, Crush 40 versus Cash Cash Edition, originally from Sonic CD and submitted by Square Evil.
Of the rainbow.
Planet Wisp Act 1 from Sonic Colors and submitted by Carlos.
The intro theme to the Sonic the Hedgehog animated series, submitted by Phoenix Down.
Speeds by Sonic the Hedgehog, too fast for the naked eye. Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic, he can really move. Sonic, he's got an attitude. Sonic, he's the fastest thing alive.
Actually, it's the Sonic the Hedgehog medley from the Super Guitar Bros, still submitted by Phoenix Down.
Thank you.
originally from Sonic 2 and remixed by Sean Shafiansky, submitted by Jean-Marc.
Aquarium Park Act 1 from Sonic Colors and submitted by Wilson.
Lab from Sonic Battle and submitted by Kyle JCRB.
Zone played backwards from Sonic the Hedgehog and submitted by Onit.
We'll be right back. Hydro City Zone, Act 1 from Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and submitted by Major Third.
Shamar, Nighttime Version, from Sonic Unleashed, and submitted by Zachary.
Eternal Engine, from Sonic Adventure 2, and submitted by Brian.
Azure Blue World, Sonic Generations version, originally from Sonic Adventure, and submitted by me. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is Grant Kirkhope, a composer famous for his work on series such as Banjo-Kazooie and Viva Pinata. To submit your suggestions,
or just say cheers, governor,
hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast, email us at podcast@ocremix.org, or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. But for lyrical wisdom, we have something special today, don't we, Stephen?
Yes, we do. We have something very special.
Indeed. So, astute listeners might recall that a few weeks ago, we called people to send us iTunes reviews and we would sing them on the show.
Clarification. You called that out. I was not aware of it until you said it live.
I just made it up on the spot, but yes. Nevertheless, we are men of our word, and listener and contributor Mike.
Go, Mike.
That is quite a reference. Left us a review on the iTunes store, and we are now bound by law and oath to sing this review. Now,
yeah, so that,
this review he left was maybe a couple dozen lines of rap.
Yes, it was. It was maybe one of the reasons that we wanted to delay putting up a full episode, because we were greatly intimidated.
Yeah, and we wanted to do it properly. So instead of a normal lyrical wisdom, we're going to do an entire song of lyrical wisdom sung by us.
Yes, and I don't know about you, Brian. Actually, I do know about you. I know about both of us.
Yes.
And we learned everything we know about hip-hop.
Yes.
And about rap from Knuckles. So play the music.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Here we go.
You ready to go?
Oh boy, am I.
Well then, let's go.
Okay, here we go, folks. It's time to break it down for ya.
The year was 99 and the world less fun for fans of VGM once the credits were done.
Whether expert or novice, there just wasn't a place for creative takes on every level, fight, and race.
We were pixieless and our zircons were few. I had never made a fist despite my shirt from OCU.
It was a time without harmony, and Arrowsy too. The whole world was lost, like a maze without a dude.
Then a DJ named Pretzel assaulted our ears with tunes from Pixel Dreams and
Digital Fears.
But not the same stuff that plays right out of the box. We're talking remixes that have a will to rock.
Together with Larry and A Sword What's Dark, they set out to make the online soundscape spark.
Around those songs grew a crew of a kind. Looks like Fishy, Away, Drumultima, and Blind.
Ooh, okay, how was that?
Man, rapping like a pro is hard.
Word.
Then two brothers appeared,
like plumbers red and green, to take the conversation beyond the old routine.
Hailing from Houston, they put on quite a show. It's a great listen.
Why not War with Radio?
They interview your favorites from the VGM scene, a show every week, a well-oiled machine.
And don't forget the playlist, please send your submissions. Don't argue with these guys, they have
lyrical wisdom.
I got the next one. Expand your horizons, don't listen to Vivo. We got hot pop hits from our main man, Steve-O.
Or,
so what's next?
You might ask for good old OCR. Join the forums, find out, it's not that far.
There you'll find conversations about things you love, from vigilantes to knights to a star above.
Whether for the horde or just crushing sweets, it's the twin bee's knees and the jet set beats.
So remember, kids, wherever you are, for your VGM fix,
go to OCR!
It's a lie. We also learned from Donkey Kong and Pokemon.
That's a good point.
All right.
It was like 80-20.
That'll be it.